It's time for Supply Chain Now Radio, sponsored by Apex Atlanta and Talent Stream. Broadcasting live from the supply chain capital of the country, Atlanta, Georgia, Supply Chain Now Radio spotlights the best in all things supply chain. The people, the companies, the technologies, the best practices, and the critical issues of the day. Now, here are your hosts.
All right, good morning. Welcome to Supply Chain Now Radio. Scott Luton here with you live. Welcome to the show. We're glad you've chosen to join us. We're broadcasting live from the beautiful offices of the Georgia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, high above downtown Atlanta, the hashtag Supply Chain City. So we want to recap how to listen live. So if you go to supplychainnowradio.com, you're going to see a big red easy button up at the top. Usually that features our very next show. You can click on that. That'll take you to the live player, and you can tune in live in case you're listening on a replay now. Of course, you can always find us on Apple Podcasts and SoundCloud, where you can search for Supply Chain Now Radio, and we'd love to have you subscribe. It's really easy. You'll never miss a show, and you'll get access to almost 90 podcasts and webinars that we have uploaded to those accounts. So let's say good morning to our extraordinary host and my co-host for the show, Albert Sorto, Vice President of the Georgia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. Albert is a well-connected businessman here in Georgia, and he serves on our Apex Atlanta Executive Advisory Board. Good morning, Albert.
Hey, good morning, Scott, and good morning to all of our guests.
Absolutely. We have some home run guests today. We're going to introduce in just a second, and really appreciate your consistent facilitation and advocacy. As I tell everybody, the Georgia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce is on a roll, and their events, they all sell out, and they serve the community, and they help make business happen. So we're glad, excited to be here broadcasting live here today. So let's talk about Albert for a second, because Albert is an incredible servant leader. He does a ton of community service. You know, we've been collaborating, as I mentioned, for a couple years now. It's always a pleasure. I think Albert, and we'll bring our guests in here in a second because they're nodding their heads, Albert stays at one. He never gets too high, never gets too low. He is smooth as they come, and he's just a great collaborator. Our listeners on this show have heard us talk about our Supply Chain 101 efforts where we've taken teams of volunteers into elementary schools to talk supply chain. That's been up and running for almost 2 years now. We've been in about 12 schools, 30 sessions, and have reached out and engaged about 750 third, fourth, and fifth graders. And none of that would have happened. We would not have gotten that off the ground without Albert's critical help and the support of the Georgia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. So really appreciate what you do, Albert.
You're welcome. The experience was very rewarding and very satisfying. So I'm glad I was able to help and continue to help.
You're on the short list. You need something, you call Albert Sorto. All right. So as y'all can tell, I'm partial. I've got an Albert Sorto tattoo on my right arm. But so today's episode is sponsored by Babaloo, which is the place for incredible tapas and tacos. They've got a variety of locations throughout the Southeast, which I didn't know. Their largest location is in Midtown Atlanta. Didn't know that either. But they've got incredible food, and you can learn more at eatbabaloo.com. eatbabalu.com. Albert, did you know where Babaloo got its name from?
No, but I had a guess. Okay. But I'm going to let you tell us.
You know, I'll steal my thunder twice. So, according to the website, the Holy Grail, right? In honor, so Babaloo, the owners of Babaloo named the restaurant that in honor of composer and singer Miguelito Valdez, a.k.a. Mr. Babaloo. And so that was one. And then the second reason, which you said earlier in the pre-show, after the signature song of the television character Ricky Ricardo, played by Desi Arnaz in the television comedy series I Love Lucy. So you were right on number two.
That was the first thing that came to my head when I saw the name Babaloo. I just kept thinking of I Love Lucy and Desi Arnaz.
Oh, classic series and classic couple. So really good stuff, neat story to the name, great food, eatbabaloo.com, and we appreciate their support. Big thanks to the fine folks over at that establishment. Okay, so big show lined up today. Let's welcome today's featured guest. First off, we've got Tanya Allen, President and CEO of IT Gressa Consulting. Good morning, Tanya.
Good morning, Scott. Thank you so much for the invitation.
You bet. Glad to have you back. We're going to be picking your brain on some very hot topics here in a minute, but great to see you again.
Thank you.
Jesus Martinez, principal at Peachtree Commercial Capital. Good morning, Jesus.
Good morning, Scott. Thank you for having us here today.
Glad you're here as well. I've probably seen you at thousands of GHCC events. It seems like you're at every one, which is fantastic, and we're going to touch on that in a minute.
Okay. Including the Joint Industry Association.
Yes.
Networking that. He came to one back in August. You've been to a couple of them, but I think the first one was back in July last year. Mm-hmm.
And we're gonna touch on that. That Joint Industry Association of Georgia is a really neat initiative that our friends over at the Georgia Manufacturing Alliance have been driving for a number of years, which is it really helps to build relationships between all these associations that serve the community and serve industry. It's been a really neat bridge. But great to have Tanya and Jesus, great to have you both here. We're going to be interviewing each of you here shortly. But we're going to start out today, as we do just about every episode, where we're going to talk about some of the top things to know in supply chain now. So in our episode this past Monday, we interviewed U.S. Congressman Drew Ferguson, who was a former mayor of West Point, Georgia, which has a big Kia plant. And at full production, which is just an incredible statistic, when they're at full production, a new Kia rolls off that line every 53 seconds. And that's before the Telluride, which if y'all saw the Super Bowl commercial, I think they shipped that first Telluride from the Georgia ports this week, which is being made in West Point, Georgia. So just an incredible story. But anyway, in Monday's episode, we covered the I almost called it a startup, but it's not a startup when you raise $37 million in fundraising, probably. Roadie, R-O-A-D-I-E, logistics technology firm. They help it's like almost like a ride share for cargo. So folks that are making a car trip to, you know, Columbia, South Carolina or Miami, Florida, and they've got room, they my understanding is they communicate that through the Roadie system, and folks that want to ship, you know, car-sized cargo takes advantage of that space, and it's probably pretty cost-efficient. But Roadie just raised $37 million in fundraising, and a big chunk of that came from a big investment from Home Depot, which is neat. Flexport, Albert, as we talked about, they're basically neighbors.
Yes.
Right? I think they've got about 200 people here in town. They've recently raised $1 billion in investment. Holy cow. That went through Peachtree Commercial Capital.
Would love that one.
But you talk about great weeks. I think Roadie and Flexport both have had great weeks, and both of them, as a matter of fact, were nominated for the Atlanta Supply Chain Awards, which we're going to touch on in a second. But that's big news in the supply chain space. In other news, I was reading this morning, Walmart may be figuring out e-commerce. So if you've tried Walmart for e-commerce like I have in the last couple of years, it's had some tough critics as its e-commerce operations have certainly hit a few speed bumps. I'm not going to beat them with a big stick, but we tried Walmart for one of our team members we had a very specific PC that was located in a certain store in Georgia near where this team member was based. And we tried to order that via its e-commerce platform, and it got charged a couple times, and they ended up not having that item available, which is the whole reason we chose it. So that was, now, Mr. and Ms. Walmart, that was years ago, and it looks like they've ironed out a lot of those initial challenges. You know, they've made some acquisitions. They've invested in some technology and some talent. And according to the Supply Chain Digest, which is where I got this bullet point from, they recently reported a 43% increase in online sales for the critical fourth quarter 2018 holiday season, right? So it also went on to talk about some of the stock prices as it relates to Amazon, which, you know, I'll set that aside. But I didn't see any service level metrics. That's what I really am interested in, because I think in my experience, and I'll defer to our other experts in the room, you know, I think a lot of times the opportunity buy and the price and it being available is a big reason why you complete the purchase. And then sometimes the service issues pop up after the fact. So we'll continue scanning that that story to see if we can get some service level metrics, because I think that's where the larger challenges were. I mean, Walmart's got some incredible purchasing power, and if they can iron out the service issues, maybe they can better compete with Amazon. Any commentary on Walmart e-commerce?
No, and that one, I think it's a great move on their part, because they have a very excellent footprint all over the map. Mm. So from the logistics perspective, if they fine-tune their inventory controls, I think that would really, you know, increase their sales and customer satisfaction.
Absolutely.
I've had that experience too, where I've ordered something because it says it's available at the nearest one to me, and after I place the order, they tell me it has to be placed on order because it's not available after all.
Yep. And, you know, to be fair, and we try to be fair and impartial, certainly, here at Supply Chain Radio, they've been fairly honest with the challenges they've had, and they've spoke about them at forums, in interviews. You know, e-commerce is not a place for the faint of heart, especially at that scale. So that's really neat to see because, you know, if we talk about anything here, we talk about Amazon's success and their innovation, and, you know, you want to see good competition in that space. So kudos to Walmart, and we will be on the lookout for what happens in the quarters to come. So locally, kind of moving it back in, Albert, please report that the 2019 Atlanta Supply Chain Awards are sold out. We took a page from the GHCC. We sold out an event.
Awesome.
Can't believe it.
Awesome. Great.
So this first-year awards program, which is aiming to celebrate success across the end-to-end supply chain, has filled up the luncheon scheduled for March 12th at the Buckhead Club. Big thanks to our host sponsor, UPS, which I know we're all big fans of, along with our organizers at Apex Atlanta, one of the show's sponsors, CSCMP, Atlanta Roundtable, and the Metro Atlanta Chamber. And, of course, all of our other sponsors and supporters, including the Georgia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce, which is serving as a presenting sponsor, one of our generous sponsors. Albert, you're all going to be presenting the Warehousing and Fulfillment Excellence Award, right?
Yes, absolutely. We're looking forward to that event. I think this is a great platform. As we move forward into our second, third year and so on, we are looking forward to recognizing more local businesses doing great things in the supply chain space.
Absolutely. Because we all know Atlanta and the metro Atlanta area, and for that matter, Georgia is such a great state to do business in, especially supply chain business. Best state to do business in 6 years in a row, according to site selection groups out there. And we feel it. You know, as entrepreneurs and business owners in this room, I know that we can appreciate the environment they've created. So let's talk about the GHCC. I know y'all have got some big events coming up that we're going to ask you about. But tell us more about the Georgia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce and a little bit of its history and where it's headed.
Absolutely, absolutely. And thank you again for the opportunity, Scott. I'm going to do a brief overview of our Georgia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. We are going to be celebrating 35 years of serving the Georgia community this year. So that to us is very exciting. Currently, we have about 1,300 members. Over 820 companies are members of our chamber. We are operating historically, we used to operate just in Metro Atlanta, but as our membership has been growing, we've been taking our programming out to where our members are located. So we are now in five counties in the surrounding area of Metro Atlanta, which I think has great impact, and this has also been able to be achieved through partnerships with other local chambers in the area. Right now, for us, what we have done with the Georgia Chamber, we recently, most of you know, we have done a partnership which we think is very historic and very impactful.
Big news
for us to be able to reach everybody at a statewide level. So to us, this is a very unique and very important membership that we already see in the benefits of this great partnership. I just want to go over some of the pillars that we focus as a chamber.
Sure.
A lot of people have asked me how we differ from other chambers. We do a lot of the other things that these other chambers do, but we serve as for the Hispanic-owned businesses. We help them how to grow their businesses, how to connect them to opportunities, and we bring educational information that will serve them so they can expand or grow their businesses. But for the non-Hispanic-owned businesses, we have a lot of members who are either Caucasian, African-American, Asian. They recognize that the buying power is coming from the Hispanic growing community, and they want to know how to tap into that market, how to properly market to that market, be able to understand the culture. And that's the benefit we bring as a Hispanic chamber to these other members that are non-Hispanic, you know. But really quick, I'm just going to go over the five pillars. I'd invite you all to visit our website, www.ghcc.org. But our five pillars are business development. We focus also on women. Many of you may not know that Georgia holds the second place in the nation as a state that most businesses are started by women. I believe in 2017, there were 526,000 businesses in the state of Georgia started by women-owned companies.
That is so. That's huge. That's 1 year, 500.
In 2017, I think Florida took the number one spot by a couple thousand more.
That is fantastic. We have to share that with our friends at Show Me 50, Elba Pereja Gallagher.
Absolutely.
I had no idea. I've been studying this for challenging myself to better understand. Right. Yes. So you can help move the needle, but that's a huge figure.
And to any of you that have come to any of our new members' breakfast, when you see the presentation, you will see that nearly 60% of our businesses are women-owned within our chamber. The other pillar that we focus on is advocacy. We are the only Hispanic organization in the state of Georgia who has a full-time lobbyist during legislative session, providing a weekly report and advocating for the interests of our members. The other pillar is leadership. Since 2015, we entered into a partnership with the University of Georgia and the Fanning Institute for Leadership Development, and we develop a leadership program called CHILI, which stands for Cultivating Hispanic Leadership Institute. This is a six-month program that helps either those who want to take leadership positions in business, community, or other nonprofit organizations here in the state, how to fine-tune, how to get the tools so they can go back and give out, to the community. And the last one, which I think everybody has been focused on lately, is millennials. We have a group of a little bit over 200 members who are between the ages of 21 and 35. So nearly 2 years ago, we formed our millennial branch, which is called HYPE, and that stands for Hispanic Young Professionals and Entrepreneurs. I'd say 80% of them are recent college graduates with degrees in different professions. And the other 20% are actual entrepreneurs who have started their own businesses and are doing great here in the state of Georgia.
Wow. Well, we're just really tip of the iceberg. We could spend a week talking about all the different programs and events. I mean, it's really impressive. Apex Atlanta, one of our sponsors, and we're Albert and I both volunteer at, joined a couple of years ago, and it's been one of those short list partnerships that has really built some meaningful relationships for our organization. And it's been a great meeting new people and certainly collaborating with Albert. So real quick, before we move on to our featured guest, Albert, you've got a couple of big events coming up between the breakfast and the open house, right?
Yes, absolutely. So this is a big deal for us because this is our annual legislative breakfast. But last week we received confirmation from our new governor, Brian Kemp, and our lieutenant governor, Jeff Duncan, that they will be attending and speaking at our event. We actually just had to change venues because the original venue could only hold 200 people. So we moved to a venue that can hold 300.
Wow.
And we are about to sell out on that one as well. So this is a free event for GHCC members. There are still sponsorship opportunities. And for those businesses, this is a great opportunity because this is, unlike some other events that are done here in the state of Georgia with our governor, where thousands are in attendance, this is a more intimate setting when there's only 300 people, and you'll be able to have that time to address some questions to our speakers.
And that's Tuesday, March 5th.
Tuesday, March 5th.
And seats are open, but not for long. Sponsorships are open, but probably not for long. That's fantastic. And I like the, if I've noticed anything over the last couple of years is politics is such a slippery slope these days, right?
Yes.
But you welcome both sides. You welcome the debate. You welcome the engagement. And you really encourage your members to get out and engage with the leaders that y'all bring into your
programs. Absolutely. Our focus is on business growth for the state of Georgia and for our community.
Love it. So to learn more, not only can you reach out to Albert Sorto, probably on LinkedIn, but you can also reach out to ghcc.org, a very robust organization, and they certainly have Supply Chain Now Radio's seal of approval, if that means anything these days. I don't know, but they're good people, robust programs, and if you're doing business in Georgia and certainly in Metro Atlanta, you want to check them out. So, Albert, of course, you're going to be co-hosting this segment with me. We've got two guests, and first off, I should say again, appreciate y'all hosting today's episode and making all the connections for us that y'all do. First guest today on Supply Chain Now Radio is Tanya Allen, President and CEO of ITGRESA Consulting Group. So good morning again, Tanya.
Hi, good morning, Scott. Thank you.
Glad to have you here again. So I learned a little tidbit a month or two ago in terms of the origin of your company name. So before we talk about what you do, what the company does, and what it provides, tell us about the origin of the name.
Well, ITGRESA, when I was working in the oil industry, that is my background in energy, I used to do side jobs in IT, and I had a retailer business of fashion and jewelry. Mm. So we call that in my country Matando Tigres.
Okay.
Kill tigers. But I couldn't call my company Matando Tigres, right? So I name it IT as a technology information, GRESA.
Yes.
The tigers of IT.
Love it.
So
love
that's
it.
Where the name came from.
Love it. And so tell us about what the company does. What are some of the core solutions that you offer and some of the core problems you're helping companies solve?
We are an IT consulting company. We offer cybersecurity, web development, network design, and we also give back to the community and teach children robotics from the age of 5 to 15 years old. We have competed in BattleBots, in DragonCon, and MomoCon.
Really?
Yes. MomoCon, we got second place. In DragonCon, we got a slaughter. That's okay. We learn a lot.
So are you supporting a variety of teams, or do you have an ITGRESA team that you know you have kids join the team, and how does that work?
We've been doing this for 7 years. First, I started because of my kid. Of course, I'm biased. I am an engineer. I want my kids to be engineers. Mm. So there was no the school where my kids are when they didn't provide this program. So I decided, well, I know all this stuff. Let's just do it in home. So let's try see how it works. Then so it was my kids, then the friend of my kids, then the neighbor, then all the children and the classmates. So we've been doing this now for 7 years. Mm. We coach and we train children in robotics. So lately we have been doing BattleBots.
Yes.
Which is, you can imagine. So my legacy is to build more engineers to when they get to be in high school, it's too late because they think it's too hard. Engineering is too hard. And by starting them early, they don't think it's hard. They think it's fun. So if you expose them to concepts that they think later is going to be hard, they think, well, by the time they get to be in high school, they think, I know already what I'm going to do with robotics. Mm. I'm going to be a bioengineer. I'm going to be a guy who builds robots for manufacturing.
It's almost like you're demystifying. These kids aren't as scared as of taking on these projects and these you know, robotics and these you know, challenges. Seems like you're helping to demystify that and showing how rewarding it can be to get involved, right?
That's right. And many times it's the parents, not the kids. Mm. The parents, yeah, that think, oh, my girl, my daughter, she's going to be a dancer. And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right, nothing wrong.
But the child have indications that they can do, they can take other things a little more challenging. And sometimes, the last time I have a parent that say, well, I want my kid to be a movie producer, which is, there is nothing wrong with it.
That's right.
And I said, bring them. I want to see what they can do. And surprise, surprise, a week later, they said, Miss Allen, I want to go to Georgia Tech to be an engineer.
Wow. Because they weren't, oftentimes, I think some of the opportunities in today's, you know, as parents and sometimes as educators, maybe we're used to talking about some of the common roles and occupations, right? And which are great, doctor, attorney, all the things, all the typical stuff. However, you know, I would argue from a manufacturing, supply chain, logistics, transportation standpoint, and then supply chain, those aren't necessarily, sometimes they have a stigma attached to them. Sometimes the parents have certain assumptions about the industry. Mm-hmm. there are lucrative jobs and careers in these fields, but we've got to connect that back to the schools and the parents, right? So it seems like that's your compadres in fighting, you know, fighting a good fight in that regard, right?
Yes, it's just supposed the kids to concept that they have an idea. Many of them have an idea what they can do, but then when you expose them to the concept and they start building, okay, let's see how we can bring it to life by programming those models and stuff like that. So they see, wow, this is fun. This is not difficult. Some of them, they are very fragile, and they say, oh, my God, my model broke down. And yep. I said, well, now there is the opportunity to build something better.
Yep.
How we can make it that it won't break that easy, and put some other things that it will make it more robust. So
love it.
It's continuous
improvement.
Exactly.
Yeah.
To improve it.
Mm-hmm. So, and I like what you put, because there aren't any bad guys or gals. We all don't know what we don't know, right? So we're not, you know, educators. We are all, as humans, we teach from our point of view and our right. perspective. So what I love in terms of what you've shared is you're getting out and not only planting these seeds of awareness, but you're also engaging kids and helping them, you know, tackle these areas that they may or may not have, you know, known about earlier. We could talk about this for days. I love, you know,
thank you.
It's bringing some memories to me. Back in high school, I took robotics, and my teacher was very involved into what I was doing the rest of my other classes. And I still remember Mr. Rogers was my teacher for robotics, and Mr. Davis was my algebra teacher. Mm. So they communicated. Mr. Davis tells my robotics teacher that I wasn't doing that great in algebra. And he brings me and says, I don't understand. You're doing great here. Why can't you do great over there?
Mm.
And then I believe there was a formula I wasn't quite getting. And he's like, Albert, it's the same thing you're doing for robotics. If you look, if you're trying to find the resistance or you're trying to find the current to this problem, pretend you're looking for the current. Pretend you're looking for voltage. Mm-hmm. Pretend you're looking for resistance. It's the same problem.
That's right.
If you can do it for this, you can do it for that. And that made it a lot.
You had a breakthrough
for me to understand.
Yeah. A eureka moment.
Yes.
Yeah. The teacher's triangulated Albert Sorto there. What was that?
When you manipulate the components, the resources, the materials, it gives you another experience. So I am a dyslexic. I am a visual learner, and that is why I know there are children who learn by in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
How you can teach a child concepts that are difficult, you just have to expose them to different ways of a learning experience.
So let's change gears a bit, because we can talk. You're speaking my passion here. I mean, you know, engage the next generation. But let's talk about, you came out to the APICS Regional Supply Chain Leadership Leadership Conference in October, which we held at Georgia Tech. And I'll tell you, not just my personal experience, but others, the feedback we got is you gave some really eye-opening perspective on cybersecurity. Because you know, believe it or not, at least in the APICS community that I've been involved in, we don't talk enough at the local level about the dangers of cybersecurity and the challenges and protecting, you know, the supply chains, Jesus, that we were talking about in the warm-up conversation. There's so many gaps and there's so many opportunities for those that want to do bad things to do bad things. So what are, if you were speaking to the APICS or the supply chain community, what are some key considerations as it relates to cybersecurity for 2019? Tanya.
Okay, as we know right now, the weakest link of cybersecurity is the human factor, is us. And the reason is because they tap into our, you know, when we're fixing to go to work or to go to home, or when the reason that is getting more and more difficult for people who are getting attacks is because there is a lot of social media proliferation of information, and sometimes people want to get their information on social media, but they don't know they are actually making themselves a target. So
intermingling personal and work and social media is for all the great things it is, it provides information to those that
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so what happened is sometimes people think, well, there is nothing that I have that I can make myself a target. But when you look at who you are connected with, who you are working with, and they go and post in social media, they are getting a big contract with one of the biggest company. Mm. Well, that makes yourself a target. So people don't realize that the hackers get the information. Their information is from actually social media. Mm. They have other ways to find information about what you do and who you relate to. But if you make it easier, so you won't go and leave your house open with the windows open and put a sign say, "I'm out of town."
Right.
You won't do
or
that.
Or I'm a multimillionaire.
Exactly. And by the way, I have a big contract with right. Target or something like that. So people need to be aware of this kind of situation. The way that we're trying, that we're trying so hard to help business not to become target, the same way the hackers are making their doing their best to go and find tools to help them target business. Mm. The way that we're trying to help and protect business, they are doing their best to hide their tracks, mm. and so we can, you know, we can
can't do root cause analysis on where the attack came from.
Exactly. So there is a lot of it's not going to become any better since the way that we're having right now a tsunami of technology, and we have more data that we can a human being can handle with the IoT, which is generating so much data. Before we didn't know how to monetize data. Mm. Now we do know how to monetize data, and that is why the hacking business is getting more profitable, and it's not going to go anywhere. So with that, that is how we see supply chains attack through vendors, through whoever is connected.
Where the systems come together, those connections can, is that, are those some of the weaker points in the end-to-end supply chain? Is where company A may be connected with company B and their systems have to communicate? Are those weaknesses?
Yeah, there are some way that these companies collaborate or integrate, and those are some of these which creates vulnerabilities. We have a client, for example, that they told me, "Hey, we want you to run a simulation for us," mm-hmm. whatever. And that client is on the other side of the country. And for us to be able to see all the vulnerability from here from Georgia, that was a big problem. Mm. Because if I could see all the vulnerabilities and problems that they have from Georgia, somebody else from the other side of the country, like Russia or China, they could see it as well. Mm. So when they come to us and they said, please just run a simulation, please help us with this, and we find some other ways to the hackers can compromise and you know, and do a lot of damage, not only to them, because this company was connected to another
to
company.
Some big retailers and other big companies.
It's a $80 million company.
Wow.
So yes.
So this was like a vulnerability assessment. Or audit, is that kind of a fair way to call the simulation work you did?
Well, the thing is, we were going to do a simulation.
Uh-huh.
We ended up doing an assessment. By the time they gave me all the information, I didn't need it. I already had it.
Wow.
I already had
That's
it
scary.
Because it's social media, because all the stuff, all the holes, and all the open doors that they have. So then we learned that they were their emails or the of the headers of the company were getting a spoof. And so we realized that hackers are utilizing attacks that they haven't been used in a while, and they are the new attacks as well.
So I wish we had a couple more hours with you, because this is such a huge topic. In fact, you know, when you spoke for an hour at Georgia Tech, folks were wanting more, but we had hit our, you know, we had, you were the cleanup hitter that day, if you remember, four speakers, and we finished on one of the scariest topics. But we're going to have you back, and we're going to take a deeper dive. Love what you're doing with robotics. And the tiger of IT, I love that. So also, we're not going to be able to dive into this, but Tanya Allen was named the GHCC Businesswoman of the Year winner for 2018, I believe, right?
Correct.
And we need to dive into your involvement with the GHCC on the next show. But it was good to see you. One last question. It was good to see you at the APEX Atlanta Executive Roundtable last week at Graphic Packaging International Headquarters. We focus in on S&OP. You have one key takeaway from that experience?
Well, we work with a lot of companies in different industries. I really love that you invited me to that event, because listening to all these companies that were there about their challenges in the in supply chain, it helped us to realize how we in IT can help these challenges, you know. As I said before, there is a tsunami of technology. Mm. A lot of time people call us and say, hey, what kind of solution we can implement to fix or to improve our processes and services. And it helps us when one of the things that a lot of people were saying is that they're still doing things in a spreadsheet.
Oh, yeah. We love our Excel spreadsheets and supply chain, right?
Yes.
I think it's an addiction that we're having a hard time getting people off of.
Yes, and I'm sorry, but I'm here to tell you that that is not going to help in the long run when now we have business owners trying to decide as fast as they can, and you have to provide services and applications and products the faster that you can. Before, it used to be, okay, how good this can be, I want it to work. Now they don't really care much about how it works. They just want the things done faster.
And that's where IT Gressa can help with that automation.
And integration.
Integration's a big one, too.
Yes.
Getting systems to talk to each other securely and effectively. So to learn more, our listeners can go to IT Gressa, GRESA.com, right?
Correct.
Don't reach out to Tanya on social media. But go there. You'll be able to submit a form if they want to, you know, set up a time to talk with you, because there's no shortage of challenges that you've touched on today that y'all clearly address. And we're going to have you back on, and we're going to take a deeper dive about cybersecurity. You had another comment, Tanya?
Yes. When we started the business, we were not interested in doing SEO and social media. But because we have seen so many problems about people posting information that actually made them a target, we're offering that kind of service as well, just to make sure that your business online presence and physical presence is safe.
Mm. Progress is a wonderful thing, but it opens up, you know, some of the Pandora's box, some of the disadvantages. You know, we want things in 2 hours, and we want systems talking to each other and all this stuff, but we gotta make sure we're doing things securely.
Yes, so slow down a little bit.
Absolutely. Tanya Allen, thanks so much. Founder, president, and CEO of IT Gressa Consulting Group. We're going to have you back again soon. Thanks again, Tanya.
Thank you, Scott.
And don't go anywhere. We're going to get you weigh in on something here at the end of the show. All right. Albert, wow. That's quite a leadoff hitter.
I know. It is. It is. And I was just trying to piece together, you know, how technology nowadays, and I run into a lot of businesses that are still using some outdated techniques.
Mm. And I am. You're running into me. I've lost my stuff. It's outdated.
And they wonder how come they're not keeping up or being able to, you know, to grow. And that's a great point that you made, Tony.
Great point. Great input and great resource. So let's shift gears, and we're going to introduce our next guest today on Supply Chain Now Radio, Jesus Martinez, principal at Peachtree Commercial Capital. Good morning, Jesus.
Good morning, and thank you again for having me here today.
You bet. Glad to see you once again. It's the 127th time, I think, after all the events you're at. But that's great to have good business people and entrepreneurs engaged in the GHCC. I think it's one advantage for being a part of it. So tell us about Peachtree Commercial Capital and how you're helping companies, especially with an eye towards the end-to-end supply chain.
Okay. Well, our humble beginnings.
Okay.
About a year ago, I sat down and said, you know, I need to do something different. Being in the finance industry for such a long time, I felt that there was a need for a brokerage firm to help consumers find the capital that they're needing, not particularly just going to a bank and saying, hey, can I borrow money, but what kind of money can I borrow? You know, not every loan is designed the same. You know, there's several different ways that people can borrow money, and it's not just going to banks saying, hey, you know, I need, you know, $1 million, you know, so it doesn't fit everybody. So, the you know, I started this company with that in mind to help educate the consumers on the different aspects of lending, you know, how it works, how it can affect them long term, short term, you know. So with that in mind, we put together a program that is designed to help consumers find ways to move their company forward, you know.
And specifically, we were talking in warm-up of some of the unique manufacturing needs, because that's some of the work that y'all do. Talk just a little about that.
Well, in the manufacturing needs, you know, you have a lot of companies coming to Georgia, manufacturers that are producing millions and millions and millions of products that are being shipped all over the world. That's a great thing. It's a great thing for the Georgia economy. But these companies also struggle with being paid. You know, they ship millions of dollars worth of products, but they have to sometimes wait 60, 90, 120 days to get paid on that product. But in the meantime, they still have to continue to produce more product.
Absolutely.
So a lot of them fall short in finding the money or the funding to continue doing business. So it's a struggle for them.
And you've got a little factoid that I wasn't aware of. Tell us about that.
Well, it's in doing research and doing homework and building the company, you want to know more where things come from, how they work and how they operate. And I looked into factoring. Factoring is what now they call asset-based lending or invoice financing. And factoring was actually designed by business owners here in Georgia back in the late 1800s.
Wow. Yeah,
when you look at this, like, wow, this has been around for such a long time, but it started here in Georgia.
Right. Wow. Well, you know, what's interesting is kind of bringing that full loop is that fintech industry is huge, and in fact, I think if my numbers are right, almost 80% of credit card and debit card transactions go through Georgia-based processing facilities. And what I learned earlier in an earlier episode is that the Federal Reserve presence that's based in Atlanta has a lot to do with that. So that's great. That's a natural advantage, but also the technology, talent, infrastructure, and some of what you touched on there, the innovation that's in the state, right?
Absolutely.
So let's shift gears a bit, Jesus. Let's talk about any trends from last year, what you're seeing the first of this year, you know, from a growth standpoint. What are some things you're seeing?
One of the biggest things that of course, the law that they passed in California, the Truth in Lending Act, which was designed to give small business loan applicants the annual rate that they pay for their loans. Well, that's California. How does it affect us here? Well, anytime there's a law passed in any state, if it's going to do well for the consumers, most states are going to enact the same law. So eventually, yes, we will have that law here. So the other biggest things that you look at in this industry is you look at, you know, most of the banks now are going to go to online, you know, applications to make the processes even faster for the consumers. You know, one of the things is that, you know, you get a consumer who wants, you know, to move forward with their company. They need money to keep the business moving forward. But it takes them 90 days to get that loan.
Wow.
So, you know, most of the banks are going to find ways to make it faster and easier for consumers to borrow the money and not take such a long time to get the approval they want.
So we want our money, and we want it now.
Yeah, we want it now. Yes.
We want the what that enables us to do.
But, you know, the one thing, and I'm going to talk about Tanya, is that all this has to do with technology. Everything has to do with technology. So, you know, the banks have to be careful in this area. You know, look what happened to Wells Fargo. You know, banks don't want to get into that that situation because it's very costly. So IT, very big for 2019. AI is also going to be very big because these banks are looking for ways to find out what these buyers are wanting, what they're needing. And AI allows them to learn the consumer, but also be able to turn that around and be able to provide the consumers what they want in a quick and safe manner.
So in a way, it goes back to what Tanya said, that in the digital supply chain,
yes,
the human factor is the weakest link. In this case, is what's holding back the money.
Mm. And that's where AI is going to be a big factor in this as well.
Yep. You know, the old phrase, voice of the customer, has been around forever. But what I'm hearing you say is a different spin. You know, so a lot of times the voice of the customer knows that their voice is being listened to and collected and analyzed. A lot of what these lending and these banks are after is the voice of the customer, that where they don't know what they're contributing from a feedback and analytics standpoint.
Yeah.
Another thing you're kind of touched on this already, AI, artificial intelligence, as it relates to this space. You know,
yeah, banks are looking for ways to not get into that situation Wells Fargo got into. You know, they want to be able to read and analyze what the customers are wanting. And if they're going to be sharing space online on the World Wide Web, they want to make sure that they're safe.
Mm.
You know, AI is allowed, it helps them to read what customers are doing, their buying habits, how often do they buy, how much they want to borrow. It reads all that, and it gives them analysis for them to be able to provide a better service for the customer online. Some companies are already using it now, some smaller companies.
Mm.
You know, to mention one here in Atlanta, Cabbage. It's a small company, and they use that right now. Everything they do, you can go online, and within a couple of hours, you can get some kind of approval.
Wow.
And most banks will take that route because it's easier for them, and it brings them a lot of business as well.
Well, it sounds like that you do a lot of, for the business you do, from a capital investment standpoint, you also, it sounds like folks come to you for advice on which avenues to get the funds and investment that they're...
Yeah, one of the things we do when we meet our clients is we do an assessment on them, just like Tanya does. And the assessment just allows us to know more about the company and be able to provide them the better service. Somebody might tell me, hey, I need invoice financing. And you really don't need invoice financing. What you need is asset-based loan financing.
Mm.
Or you need a construction loan to do exactly what you need to do. You know, there's a lot of things that are out there that people aren't aware of. And this is where we come in and educate them on what's available. Give them options. Go to a bank now, they're going to give you one option. Mm. They only have one bank.
Ours.
Yeah,
our option.
Our option, exactly. You know, so with us, we're able to give them a lot more options because I have lenders all across the United States that are willing to lend the money as long as we give them the opportunity to know more about the consumer.
Interesting. So Malcolm with the Supply Chain Now Radio research team shot me a note, and I was incorrect. Going back to the credit cards, 70% of credit card swipes, debit card payments, and gift card purchases in the U.S. go through Georgia-based companies, mm-hmm. earning the nickname Transaction Alley, which is pretty cool. And then one other footnote Malcolm shared, 6 of the 10 largest U.S. payment processing firms are Georgia-based. Mm-hmm. So sounds like a good space to be in here in Georgia.
It is. It is.
So let's switch gears for a minute here, because one of the things that we talked about in the pre-show warm-up and doing my homework on Jesus Martinez, you're very active in the Metro Atlanta business community, well-connected. I think for our supply chain listening base, I think one of the things we talk about a lot about is the power of networking and building relationships. You know, I was at a Apex Atlanta event last night, and one of the manufacturers that was there talked about the need to find a lot of new suppliers. And almost immediately, because this was a networking event, almost immediately I thought about, well, what are you doing to get out and do some homework to build these relationships, whether you use them or not, you know, figuring out the contacts out in the marketplace. Clearly, you've got a value associated with networking and building relationships. Speak to that, what you the value you see in that.
Well, networking, it's key in building any business. You have to know who to go to.
Mm.
You have to be able to have the answer, especially for the consumers. The advantage I have is that I'm well connected with the Hispanic community. I speak the language.
Mm.
People feel comfortable doing business with me because I can explain to them exactly how things work in their language, in Spanish. If I can speak other language, I would use it as well. But networking allows me to communicate not just in English, but also in Spanish, you know, to help consumers, to help business. Whether they do business with me or not, that's mm-hmm. up to them. But it allows me to be the voice of reason when it comes to loaning money.
And then with that comfortability level, you also are taking the opportunity to really invest in them and invest in a relationship, whether they do business with you or not. And it seems like you're out making new relationships daily.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. You know, if not hourly.
It's a nonstop. You know, yeah. People think, oh, I'm going to go to one event and I should hand out 20 cards and, you know, the numbers game. 20 cards, I should be able to talk to two and make one sale.
Right.
It doesn't work that way.
No, it
you
doesn't.
Know, people only do business with people they trust and that they know. You know, if they feel comfortable talking to you, if they've shaken your hand, if they visited with you, if they know who you, where you come from, they're definitely going to do business with you. But if you're just someone who hands me a card and says, hey, I'll call you, see if I can do business with you, it's going to be kind of tough to make that decision. So.
And the sad thing is that a lot of people are still doing the transactional approach.
Yes.
They just walk in, hand out
business cards,
and sometimes even leave before the meeting it's over to where they don't make a connection, you know.
Absolutely.
It's about making that connection. You have to make that connection one way or the other. Even if it's not a fit, you would know if it's a connection or not, you know.
So have you ever heard the phrase, you got to dig your well before you're thirsty?
Yeah.
And there's an author, I can't remember his name, Malcolm, I'm sure, ding me on that. But, you know, in the supply chain world, in Apex in particular, I've been a volunteer for about 14 years. And we're not, look, we've all been in transition before, right? And we're all human and don't know, we don't know. But oftentimes folks go to network when they have the need rather than kind of pay it forward and develop the relationship in advance and proactively. Speak to a little bit based on what you see out in the marketplace.
In regards to?
On-demand networking versus proactively networking, so the network's there when you need it. You know what I mean?
It's like having a family is the way I describe to a lot of people. You know, when you have a big family, I'm from New York.
Okay.
And I come from a pretty big family.
What part? What part of New York?
I was born in Brooklyn, but I grew up in Jamaica, Queens. And when you have a big family, not just the people that are blood family, but people around you that you socialize with, when you have parents that hang out together and they make big meals when it comes to celebrations, you get to know a lot of people. And then whenever you need something, you know who to go to.
That's right.
You know, you have that human touch that you cannot get from the internet. You can't get it from your cell phone.
They're trying hard to replicate that.
It's tough.
Yeah,
and to add what Jesus said, it's true because somebody come to me and ask, oh, do you know somebody who knows how to do this? Or I have this request, I have this necessity. Then we know who to refer to. Because when you refer somebody, it's a big responsibility.
Huge.
When you network and when you know people and see people's face and you know that they're responsible and you know they are into helping other people, not only to make the money.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's all about that. How you create the sense of community, we're here for you, and I'm here to help you. If I don't know, I'll find out. If I don't know, I'll refer you to somebody. Mm-hmm. And I think that what Jesus says is very key in GACC. This is the sense of community we get in GACC.
And that is the same approach we as a chamber take. We recommend those members who we see that are constantly active, that have proven their expertise in their fields, then we are more than happy to make that connection every time there's an opportunity. So there's not a week that goes by that we don't get a call from a corporation or for a government agency asking us if we can give them referrals for a supplier or for a certain product. Obviously, our members such as Jesus and Tanya are always going to come to mind because they're always actively within the community giving back by building those relationships.
And you know, one more thing is, you know, as busy as we are in our lives, it makes it so much easier to make a decision on a purchase or whatever it is that we need when we know the person and we've connected to them already.
Absolutely. And I think we're talking universal values, universal best practices here, whether you're in supply chain, whether you're in finance, technology, it doesn't matter. We all, to your point, I think you put it well, Jesus, the internet gets you a long way, but the in-person relationships and the networking, that's irreplaceable. So I hate that we're almost out of time, but how can folks connect with you and learn more about Peachtree Commercial Capital?
Well, they can log on to the website. It's www.peachtreecap.com, or they can call me direct at 404-933-8626. It's my personal line. I do that because I want to know who's calling. I want to know the people that are calling. I want to know how I can help them. So I talk to everybody personally.
Fantastic. So whether you're a manufacturer and you need to take care of these huge client orders, and you may be getting slow paid on, or if you're in supply chain logistics or other non-supply chain related industries.
Commercial real estate is a big industry here in Atlanta, you know, especially when it comes to construction and fix and flips and new constructions. All those are big right now in the industry, and there's a lot of business, especially Latino businesses, that are involved in that.
Absolutely, absolutely. PeachtreeCap.com, and as Jesus Martinez said, you can give them a call personally, which I think is pretty powerful. So thank you, Jesus Martinez, principal at Peachtree Commercial Capital, for joining us today, and we'll have you back soon.
Thank you, sir.
Albert, we could not, an hour does not do these two guests.
I know,
and
time
the
flew by
matter.
So fast. I mean, just listening to both of you.
Absolutely. And really enjoyable. I mean, I think a lot of what we talked about, while it's very relevant in supply chain, again, it's these are almost like timeless discussion topics, right? We're going to sign off on a few upcoming event announcements. We talked about the Atlanta Supply Chain Awards. Winners are formally announced March 12th at the Sold Out Banquet, and really appreciate the GHCC's support there. The Georgia Logistics Summit, March 14th. The major theme this year will be the Inland Port Strategy, which is being driven and fueled by e-commerce in a large way. The summit is registrations open. That's 2 days after the Atlanta Supply Chain Awards, and you can learn more at galogisticssummit.com. That's going to be we need to get the governor at the legislative breakfast to deem that the Georgia Supply Chain Week between the Supply Chain Awards on the 12th and the Georgia Logistics Summit on the 14th. Why not?
That would be great,
Albert. You've got him on your direct dial, right?
I think.
Okay. Come out to the summit. Come out to the Atlanta Supply Chain Awards. In May, the Association for Manufacturing Excellence is going to be holding its Atlanta 2019 Lean Summit. Speakers, plant tours, all focus on the world of manufacturing. The program includes about a dozen plant tours from Caterpillar, Ingersoll Rand, ZF, FiberVisions, you name it. And we're excited to serve as a media partner, so you can learn more at AME.org. We are also serving as a media partner with EFT's 3PL and Supply Chain Summit, which is going to be in Atlanta from June 10th through the 12th. Tanya Allen might know a couple speakers at that one. Home Run Lineup from Land O'Lakes, Uber Freight, Cisco, DHL Supply Chain, UPS, many more. You can learn more at EFT.com. Or on any of these events, you can shoot us a note to scott@supplychainnowradio.com. We'll get you the info. And we hope to be broadcasting live from the EFT event right here in the Supply Chain City. We'll see. We've got a little more negotiation to do there, Albert. Maybe bring you on board and twist some arms and stuff. big thanks to our guests today, Tanya Allen, founder and president, CEO, IT Grasa Consulting Group, Jesus Martinez, principal at Peachtree Commercial Capital. Excuse me. Big thanks. How could we forget about Babalu? Big thanks to our sponsor. Learn more about Babalu at eatbabalu.com. Of course, Albert Sorto, our extraordinary co-host and mayor. big thanks to Albert and all of his leadership and what he does in the community. And, of course, a big thanks. We're proud members of the Georgia Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. I think if you heard anything, we tried not to make this a commercial for GHCC, but I think it was four folks having a very honest conversation about, you know, the value we see here as being members. So, Albert, thank you for hosting us.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity for our chamber and for our members as well.
And March 5th, don't miss that legislative breakfast. It is going to sell out.
There's still a few spots left, and there's some sponsorship opportunities still available.
And Albert, how can folks reach out and
make
that happen?
Actually, they can call me.
Okay.
I'll give them my number.
Sure.
Being that it's around the corner, 678-437-0920.
Perfect. And Tanya may not be happy about releasing that personal info. No, I'm kidding. That's kidding. Okay. reach out to Jesus or Albert in particular if you want to learn more about this March 5th breakfast. Great event. Great to see the new governor come out and engage the GHCC community. So be sure to check out our other upcoming events, replays of our interviews, other resources at supplychainnowradio.com. Check us out on iTunes, SoundCloud. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss anything. On behalf of the Supply Chain Now Radio team, and including the Malcolm and the South Carolina, the Supply Chain Now Radio research team, this is Scott Luton wishing you a wonderful afternoon, and we will see you next time on Supply Chain Now Radio.